Hi, this is Mike Shea from SlyFlourish.com and guest writer for Critical Hits. And tonight I'm going to be talking to Dave the Game Chalker, the lead editor for Critical Hits, on a concept for 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons known as The Out. The Out is a method to add some unique and interesting ways to end your battles and to speed up combat and make things just generally more fun. I would consider this probably an intermediate Dungeon Master, intermediate to advanced Dungeon Master technique for 4th edition. So this is going to be an hour-long chat between the two of us, and I hope you'll enjoy it. All right, so I've already done an intro for the podcast, so we don't need to do an intro. I'll just add it to the beginning.
Sounds good.
Start talking. So what is an out?
An out is a term I coined for an alternate way to end battle, especially in D&D, but any role-playing game that doesn't just end when one side or the other is completely dead, out of hit points, whatever.
Right. So one could say that the original out is we've killed all of the other guys and it's time to end combat.
Right. I mean, that's
the generic one.
Yeah, the generic end condition to combat is, you know, somebody's dead, or one side is dead. But that's a default, but it doesn't have to be that way, I think, is the real purpose of the out.
Right. Right. Where did you discover it, or have you known about this for a long, long time and just recently coined it?
Yeah, it's not something that I put my finger on until recently, although I was looking, I think from posts from about 2 years ago, where people were complaining about the length of D&D combats, you know, which has been the issue from the beginning, you could say. Mm-hmm. And I put in the comments thread, like, it may be where I first started using the term out publicly, but I hadn't really pinned it down up until that point as a way to, you know, end combat early. It had just been something that I've been naturally doing, you know, because it just always made sense in the story to end this, or, you know, just as a tool for saying, you know, no matter what the reason, this battle isn't flying anymore with my players. Let's, you know, put a stop to it in a way that's at least feel somewhat satisfying and then move on.
Right, right.
I'm pretty sure I got the term from poker, actually.
Ah, how is it used in poker for us non-poker players?
In Hold'em, at least, when you've got, you know, you've got community cards that you share between the different players, and then you've got your own hand.
Right.
And then the outs are, you know, you're being beaten by someone's hand, but outs are all the cards that could come to let you win the hand.
Hmm.
And that lets you determine your percentage. You know, I've got 10 outs is 10 cards in the deck. And then you figure out from there what your percentage to win is.
Right. Right. Cool. So when you first originally talked about them a while ago, I had a lot of trouble getting my mind around how they worked and what they were. What are some examples of the out that might resonate most with people? What are the ones that people can really go, ah, okay, now I understand what they are?
Yeah, I feel like there's a couple really common ones that I fall back on. And, you know, they're used in such a variety of situations. You know, they can feel old, but they stay fresher than you might think.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, someone important is killed or bloodied or whatever, and, you know, the side surrenders or runs away.
Right.
That's one of the, I mean, that harkens back to the old, you know, like morale rules and stuff, where people won't always stay in the fight. You know, they don't always want to die from fighting.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the kind of objective-based ones, which are, you know, these guys are only trying to capture someone or, you know, recover an item or bust through to get to something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they're going to try to do that, and if they're otherwise prevented, they don't have any more reason to go on with it, or, you know, they'll break off or they'll try something else, or, you know, if it's a player thing, you know, the players might still try to, like, grab an item and then get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just, let's kill everything and then take it, you know, which,
right,
granted, is a common thing for PCs in, right, D&D, but sometimes, you know, depending on the group, you know, if they see that opportunity, they'll take it. You know, if there doesn't seem like there's going to be a big downside. So there's kind of the morale one, there's the objective one, and then there's the ones that are kind of tied around important combatants, like the, you know, the elementalist wizard who summons a whole bunch of elementals. You know, you kill him, all the elementals go away.
Right, right.
So it gives you a focus to say, okay, this is the guy who's really your enemy. You know, the rest of them are annoying and still trying to kill you, but really you want to go after this guy. And, you know, that's probably my most common, honestly.
Yeah, that's my most common as well.
Yeah, because in D&D especially, it seems like you get a lot of those situations where it's, you know, whether it's magic powered or not, mm-hmm. you know, there's an important guy in the battle and take him out and the rest just sort of falls out from there.
Right. And it works both with like magical dudes and non-magical dudes. So if you have like the Spectre Lord and his four mummies, and the mummies are really there to protect the Spectre Lord, and when the Spectre Lord is killed, the mummies kind of deanimate and fall to dust.
Mm-hmm.
But you could also have it where like a boss is commanding his five guys, and as soon as the boss is killed, the five guys, you know, when they're bloodied, they're a lot more likely to immediately surrender than they are to last the rest of the battle.
Right. They're like, whoa, 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 you don't need to kill us too.
Yeah, we were kind of just around because he was yelling at us.
Yeah, exactly. He was paying us, but now that he's gone, let's back off. Yeah, yeah. Right. That one's pretty common for
me
too.
Yeah, it's kind of easy to throw into almost any battle. You don't really need to add a lot of mechanics or a lot of, you know, complicated story elements to it. It's almost always easy to say, okay, that's the lead guy and you take him out.
Yeah, and I feel like it's easier for me as a DM to wrap my head around the motivation.
Yeah.
That these guys, you know, are there to do something. You know, they're mercenaries or they're followers of a cause or whatever, but when their lives really are on the line, mm-hmm. and they're seeing their friends cut down and the guy who's paying them, it really, you know, it would make me take a second thought, you know.
Right, right. I think Wizards actually talked about this. I can't remember if it was, I think it was in the Draconomicon, where they talked about the challenges, like draconic challenges,
yep.
where you might have a dragon that's three or four levels higher than the party, and it would be I think it was the chromatic dragon one, because they didn't want players to necessarily just be slaying chromatics all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, okay, we'll make you a deal. You know, when we either bloody half of you or you bloody us.
Right.
You know, if you bloody the dragon before half the party is bloodied, then it's considered a win or a failure if he manages to bloody the party.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of an example of an out before I'd ever really known what one was.
Yeah, that's a good one. I've used variations on that too, not just solo versus the party, where you can have an enemy group and they say, you know, we're testing your mettle or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bloody half of us before we bloody half of you before, you know, to proceed, or else you fail the test.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You set stakes or whatever.
Yeah. Or can work for, if you have conflicts that aren't necessarily, you know, lethal. I have, my group has a rival gang in the city of Tyr in my Dark Sun campaign. And when they run into the rival gang, it's known that neither side kills the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just always like to kind of, you know, bust heads.
Right. So break a few noses.
Exactly. So every battle is kind of to the bloodied, and you might even, I think, you know, I've even stated ahead of time, like, okay, the rule of engagement is they win if they bloody three of you, and you win if you bloody all of them.
Mm.
You know, in any other circumstances is, you know, those are the only two winning circumstances.
So right
at the beginning of the battle, they know exactly what their goal is.
Yep.
And it changes their strategy. So what are some of the things that you need to kind of pay attention to when you're building it out? Like, what are the, you know, when you're putting one together... Yeah. What are some of the things that you try to keep in mind while you're putting one together?
My big thing is that I just try to get my head into, you know, what the bad guys want.
Right.
You know, and let everything kind of shake out from there. Or what would be kind of interesting as far as the story goes. Because I feel like if I'm going to include a combat, you know, and it's D&D, there's going to be probably at least one an adventure, if not more. But
yeah, right.
I don't want them to just be kind of roadblock time killers. You know, I want each one to contribute some way to the story. And so outs are kind of a tool for that, where depending on how the battle goes, will kind of shape, you know, how things progress through the adventure, you know. Because
mm-hmm.
the PCs could always decide, we're going to kill everyone anyway.
Right.
But in which case, that sort of could create a branch of how the adventure could go, or if, you know, the bad guys complete their objective, that's one thing, or if the PCs complete their objective first, you know, that's another thing, and how's that going to break down? Nice. So I like to structure the combats and, you know, the ways around it, as far as the story thing goes. So just as an example, there was a pretty important battle in my game that was the accumulation of, you know, one character's backstory, right? Mm-hmm. It's like his villain and then also a mini arc of adventures that they have been going through to get to this guy. And his hook was that he had the Hand of Vecna and the Maul of the Titans, because the Hand of Vecna let him swing this gigantic, you know, giant-sized hammer. Hmm. And he was using it to summon a primordial. And the PCs were, you know, like mid-Paragon, 15, 16 maybe. Mm-hmm. And I was throwing like a 25th level primordial at them, basically.
Oh, yeah, right.
In addition to the villain, you know, with two artifacts.
Right.
And so the idea was that there were sort of multiple, you know, I wanted it to be a big battle. And so it wasn't just, okay, we can stand here and fight. You know, I seriously beefed up that primordial and I said, well, it's possible that they could get lucky and they're a pretty min-max party and they'll just hack everything down. But ultimately, it feels like it would be most dramatic if they have to, you know, hack off the Hand of Vecna, separate the Maul and use that to send away the primordial before it gets fully manifested. Mm-hmm. Right. So in that case, I knew that was the story that was most interesting to me and also seemed dramatic and a good, you know, capstone to that series of adventures. So I created that in mind and then sort of worked backwards.
Right.
You know, how
does that work mechanically?
Yeah, exactly. How do they separate the hands, you know, and what are the stats on the guys and what does that mean, et cetera.
Right. Right. That actually brings up one of my challenges when I'm building it out, which is how to, you know, part of it is how to build the mechanics around it, but a big part of it is when to reveal it or mm-hmm. how to ensure that you brought up the smash and grab idea, you know, mm-hmm. that like, okay, well maybe they don't actually have to kill everybody. They just have to get this thing. Mm-hmm. But you know, what if you have like the guy who can teleport twice and he teleports minor action grab and teleports back out again. And now not only, you know, it worked, but the battle actually took about 40 seconds instead of taking an hour. And you kind of had planned it for, you know, half hour, 45 minutes. How do you plan into your out, making sure that it still is a challenge? Like that doesn't, the out doesn't short circuit the battle too quickly.
Let's see, if a PC, I mean, ideally, you know your party well enough to know their capabilities and that kind of thing. And you can build in, if you really want it to take longer, you can always build in contingencies, you know, or obfuscate things a bit at the beginning to say, okay, you know, there's actually three possibilities where this thing that they want to get in mm-hmm. could be, you know, so one guy might do that and then, you know, there's only a 1-3 chance or whatever that that's actually the thing that you want, but at least they've narrowed it down at that point.
Right.
But overall, you're just gonna kind of want to understand and go with things too. I mean, a lot of the outs that I use, I don't know, maybe about 50-50 unplanned versus planned. Mm-hmm. So, you know, something like that, I would plan it ahead of time.
Right.
But also, there would still be the contingency of, you know, the rest of the bad guys aren't just going to sit there while someone teleports in and steals the stuff. They're going to continue to attack the party.
Right.
You know, so you still got a battle there if you do want it to go on a bit longer, or if, you know, it seems like they're not into it, you can just run with it and let it go from there, you know?
Sure, sure. Yeah, unless you spent, you know, 2 hours building out a nice encounter area and you kind of like to see it for more than 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think you can't become too attached in general.
Yeah.
I know the desire is there, especially if you set up like a whole big thing of Dwarven Forge.
Yeah, exactly. Man, I spent 2 hours on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I learned, and I learned kind of the hard way a couple weeks ago, was revealing the mechanics of an out too early. You know, I like to, there's a certain point in the battle where I want to kind of tell people, okay, you know, you've fought it enough and you've hit him enough and you've seen it enough that you can realize that, you know, this dude over here is clearly leading all the others, and you believe that if he were to die, you know, these guys would stop attacking.
Mm-hmm.
But I made the mistake. We were kind of running late in the night, and we'd already run a couple battles that went longer than I expected, and I needed to get the third out of the way. So I told them right away, like, okay, as soon as you get hit by the Spectre, you see these beams of, you know, energy that are flowing from the Mummy Lord to the Spectres, and you reckon, you know, and then I said, you know, give me a religion check, and they rolled, you know, 30 whatever. And right. I said, oh, you recognize that that energy is fueling them, that if that energy would have stopped, they would go. And they said, oh, I guess we kill the mummy. And they all just immediately, you know,
unloaded,
nuked the mummy.
Yeah.
And in like a round and a half, the whole battle was over. And, you know, there was a lots of ways that I could have dealt with it. And I'm like, oh, battle's, you know, okay, well done. You know, and the adventure was over, and they were like, hey, we did it. But it was like a big climactic boss fight, and that took less than half the time of the, you know, one of the warm-up fights on the way in. So part of that was just the pacing of the game, but part of it was that, you know, I didn't give them enough of a chance to discover how that out worked before I gave it. And actually, you know, the complaints I got afterwards, well, yeah, you know, it seemed like right away we got the instructions on how to defeat this thing, and we just did.
Yeah, I have a pretty good tool for that, actually, where you don't present it right away. It's similar to what you're talking about, but... You know, you give specific characters chances as the battle progresses to figure these things out.
Right.
By just saying, especially, this is one of my favorite things, actually, is, like, if they'll miss with an attack, and they're kind of like, oh, I really want to hit with that, you're like, well, roll this Arcana check, and, you know, and then give them a piece of that they need to know, assuming it's a decent roll, you know. I mean, sometimes they'll miss and then blow a skill roll, and you just move on, but...
Yeah, right.
Basically, the more they're involved in combat, and the more it would make sense for them to be picking up these things as the battle progresses, you know, you tell them to make skill checks, which is also good because you're not, you know, having them use actions that they might otherwise be wanting to use. You know, it's sort of, in the midst of battle, they're picking these things up as the fight goes on, which also is kind of dramatic in itself.
Right.
And then you kind of reveal it that way, and there might be several parts to it where... said, well, these things are getting fueled from somewhere else, and, you know, that's the first check, and then I'm like, oh, it seems the energy seems to be going here, and, you know, you reveal pieces at a time that way.
Right, right. Yeah, one of the things I like to do, I kind of want to run a game like a three-ring circus, so I'll have people off of their turn making the knowledge checks. You know, I'll look in the initiative order and say, okay, this guy's three ahead or three behind, so... You know, while one person is busy tallying up their damage, I'll say, okay, can you give me an Arcana check?
Yeah.
And, you know, that way they're not sitting there on their cell phone waiting for their next turn.
Right.
You can actually kind of bring them back in, and they'll learn, and then they'll discuss it with the other people who aren't playing, who aren't active.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. While the other guys, every so often I'll get groups where they don't recognize that. They think, like, the spotlight is always on whoever has the dice or whoever's turn is, and they will stop while all of the rest of that takes place. And you're like, no, you keep going. I'm paying attention to you, but I'm also letting them do some stuff.
Yeah. You could build some neat things off of that too, where if you have like two player characters who are, you know, near each other on the battle map and one of them's taking a turn, and the one that's taking a turn wouldn't notice this because he's too busy, you know, attacking, defending, whatever. Mm-hmm. But then the guy next to him, you might say, well, you only see this because you see both the bad guy and the PC fighting.
Right.
You know, here's a piece of info.
Yeah, right. You notice when he hit him.
Right.
That energy,
and then,
yeah.
Then
the other dude looked like he was getting hurt.
Yep. And then the active PC doesn't notice this. You know, like the player will probably turn to you and say, well, do I notice this? And you go, no. So that way it doesn't stop the flow of action.
Right, right. Yeah, and I mean, I think this all fits into it as well. I'm a huge fan. I've actually had far more success with skill challenges inside battles than outside. And, you know, having the in-battle skill challenge is a great way to kind of have an out wired in, where the thief is trying to open up the doors while it's flooding with, you know, acidic water, and they're getting attacked by, you know, whatever. And it's actually the thief's job to get the chamber open and out more so than it is to beat all the monsters that are in the room.
Yep.
So while he's busy doing skill check stuff, the other guys are fighting off the acid murlocs or whatever.
Yeah, and it ends up feeling more organic as far as skill challenges go, because a lot of it, you know, outside of combat kind of breaks down when you've got everyone going at once or, you know, everyone needing to contribute somehow. But in a battle, you know, there's multiple ways to contribute. Not everyone's going to be doing the same thing.
Right.
You know, if they have no applicable skills, at least they can hit things over the head.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas other skill challenges, not so much.
Yeah. I've got players that just, the minute they see a skill challenge, they get up and go and, you know, wander off and come back when the skill challenge is over.
Yeah.
But when it's in game, they can pay attention to the strat, and they're very engaged as long as we're in a battle. Mm-hmm. But they're almost, you know, they're hardly engaged at all outside of battle. So having the in-game skill or the in-battle skill challenge means that the players that like doing the skill stuff and the role-playing can still be doing the stuff that they like while the tactical person is sitting there figuring out exactly the best position to be in for an attack or whatever.
Yep.
So it's a nice way, you know, and you combine all of those things. You know, you're doing, one guy's doing the knowledge skill checks to figure out how the out is working. Another guy is actually doing the skill checks to, you know, trigger mechanisms, and another guy's actually playing. So you can have, you know, the whole table is active at any given time.
And you can kind of pressure them in that way too, where the one guy who's actually doing the fighting can stand up to, you know, the commands for a bit, but ultimately can't, you know, protect the whole party while they're making skill checks. You know, they need to keep things moving or else they're going to get splattered.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to try to make sure that they have the option of just beating them down if they don't feel either. And this actually gets to a point, which is, you know, what do you do? You know, what do you do when they don't trigger the out? Mm-hmm. What do you do when they just don't seem to, they either don't get it or they don't care? You know, I guess those are two separate problems. Like, you know, you can keep describing things until eventually you just tell them. And at that point they'll say, okay, I get what I'm supposed to do. But sometimes they're like, you know what? I just can't be bothered. You know, I'm not going to waste all of my actions running over to that corner of the room to dork with whatever skeletal, you know, totem thing you put in there. I'm just going to keep beating on this guy. Is there anything you do for that, or you just let them go?
It depends. As I said, some things are more integral to my story and some aren't. Mm-hmm. So if they really want to get into the full battle and play it all out, you know, it's, you know, probably not going to punish for that most of the time. But if it's something where it's like, no, I really want the challenge to be in figuring out what's the deal here, you know, there are ways to, you know, even if it's kind of cheating, be like, this guy is essentially unkillable until you know, disable the magic or whatever.
Right.
Or, you know, he's dealing a crap load of damage per turn. Mm-hmm. You have to, you know, deactivate this in order to stop that from happening, in order to make him, mm-hmm. you know, not so evilly brutal.
Right, right. Yeah, for most of those, I try to leave him a little bit flexible so that, you know, if there's four totems and the four totems are boosting his AC by four and or defenses by four, and every time you drop one of the totems, it lowers his defenses.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine, but they don't have to. They can still just beat the tar out of him.
Right.
You know, but they're just minus four to attack.
Right.
But then there are other ones where the entire battle is determined by whether or not they succeed in the out. The first battle in my should have been champion DM game that I ran at PAX was actually, you know, a bunch of vampires that are attacking a village, and the primary goal was to save villagers, not to kill vampires.
Right.
So, but it might not be real clear, and some people are like, I don't care about the villagers, I'm worried about these vampires. So, you know, it has an interesting success and failure criteria depending on how many villagers they save and whether they save them at all.
Yeah, and ideally you want a group that kind of splits that interest anyway. You know, some people would say, oh, well, my character's really interested in saving villagers, and some are just like, well, we have to stop the vampires, and they're kind of splitting off and doing those things and, you know, still coordinating and working as a team.
Right.
But I think it creates a more interesting story as a result than just everybody did one or the other, you know?
Right, right. So you said that you do about 50% of your outs are baked in and then 50% are on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of your on the fly outs like?
They're the same ones. It's just, it didn't occur to me up until that battle that, you know, this would be a good way to end it, or, you know, it like the energy level in the room is low, or, mm-hmm. you know, something previous took too long or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We really want pizza, you know.
Never stops my group. They just order.
Right. Or, you know, I really want to eat or something.
Right.
Know.
Right. Besides the, you know, kill the boss and the other guys become weaker or die or run, is there any other kind of out that fits the on the fly, you know, fits? Is there any other out that you can easily apply to a battle that you wouldn't necessarily have planned from the beginning?
Sort of. I mean, you can do ones where the bad guys decide they're going to retreat and then come back later.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's actually relatively easy to, you know, especially when there's magic everywhere, to just be like, oh, these guys teleport out.
Yeah.
You know, and there's an eerie pause and then you just throw them at them later, you know.
My group would be very upset. They'd find a way to go hunt them down. They actually hate, you know, they hate anytime somebody runs. They will not, you know, they will chase them to the far side of the planet. You know, I need to find every battle map I have in the house to come up with some, you know, giant chase scene.
Right.
So I guess the skill challenge would work really well there.
Also, yeah, and that's okay. That. At least you can say, okay, let's take a half an hour and eat food, and then we'll come back to you guys running these guys down or whatever.
Surrender works a lot better.
Yeah.
And they just drop their weapons like, hey, don't kill
me. Right. Which also can just lead to, you know, summary executions or whatever. But
probably the one out that I see used often with games that I play in, and one that just makes me want to, you know, tear my eyes out of my head, is the I think we'll just call the battle here out.
Yeah.
You know, like there's no story element. There's no, it's just like, we're just, you've got it and we're just going to stop. And a lot of time they will choose like the moment when you're really going to destroy something. Like the battle's clearly in your favor and you've been waiting the whole battle to be able to do all the stuff that you wanted to do.
Right.
And they, you know, but the DM knows like, well, they have it. So the DM's thinking, I'm just going to move on. But that one bugs me. Like I would come up, you know, just come up with any story reason to do it other than, you know, we'll just call it here.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I've certainly done it. And it always feels kind of weird.
Right.
Which is why I try to more come up with, not just, okay, you guys did it, you know, the end, but this guy actually surrenders or he explodes or something. Right,
exactly. I'll much prefer the, you know, and he is so horrified with his performance that he slits his own throat.
Right.
Just anything.
Right.
You know, any reason for him to not, other than the total metagame. We're all bored. Let's stop.
Right. I agree. And I've played in some games. Yeah. I've been in exactly the situation you talk about where I just, like, I'm going to kill this guy. I'm going to unload this power that I've been saving up for, you know?
Yeah, right. My guy finally got into the right position, has all of his powers ready to go, and is about to just unleash hell. And they're like, oh, we'll just stop here. Like, wait.
Yeah.
I was about to do a whole bunch of damage.
Yep.
That's funny. So what are the problems? What are some of the problems that you've seen with outs? Have you had outs that have gone horribly wrong? Have you had some that you designed and totally didn't play out like you wish?
Yeah, a lot of the time it's a matter of tweaking on the fly where you don't anticipate something being as easy or as hard as it is, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where you say, oh, it makes total sense that you'd spend 5 standard actions to do this and then he has -4 AC and you don't realize, you know, how long that's taking or how sunk or how difficult. So those, you know, I'll tweak on the fly to be like, actually it's a bit easier than I had originally planned, or it's a bit more difficult. But if you're doing anything in stages, which a lot of the skill challenge type ones tend to be, it's easier to say then, well, this was actually, you only needed 4 instead of 8 or whatever.
Right.
Or make it, you know, like you say it's going to be a standard action, but then you decide, it would really be more interesting if it were a minor action. Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of thing. There's also a lot of the time, especially in the case of surrender or running away, like you talk about, where, you know, they just wanted to kill something. Or what I really hate as a result sometimes is that, you know, someone will surrender and then the party has to get into an argument whether to kill the guy or not.
Like, how often has that argument happened over the past 25 years?
All the time, especially when you've got, you know, a mix of player types and a mix of, you know, character types. You know, some that are like, well, I'm a lawful good paladin, you know, I'm not going to let you kill him. And the other one's like, well, you know, the only way to be sure is to slit his throat. And then they get into that argument, like, at every opportunity that comes up, you know.
And then there, inner party conflict, and then a new battle starts, only now it's the rogue versus the paladin.
Yeah, exactly. And so you've actually extended your battle and, you know, created more arguments and everything else.
Right. Yeah, luckily my group isn't quite so tied to their alignment. So, you know, oftentimes they'll be like, I think we should kill him. And I was like, I don't think we should do that. Okay, whatever. Yeah, we won't.
Yeah.
The argument doesn't last more than like maybe one or two back and forths.
Yeah, and that's going into another subject. It's one of the things that tends to happen a lot with big groups. Mm-hmm. Because you will, you know, the bigger the group is, the more chance you have that those two camps will form no matter what the issue is. So, you know, with like three or four people, they'll probably come to an accord pretty easily. You know, they'll be able to make points and move on. But bigger groups then will just...
Yeah, it'll go on forever.
Yeah.
And then if depending on the kind of DM you are too, you'll play with an iron fist on something like that. I had a DM where, you know, I don't remember. I did something morally ambiguous. He's like, you drop to, you know, you are now, you know, evil. And now you have to decide how this paladin who's lawful good is going to deal with you. And I'm like, oh, for crying out loud.
Yeah, hate that.
You know, nothing that drastic changed. Like, yeah. It's not, the gods didn't come down and separate us and put us in separate corners.
Yeah, I mean, among my gaming group, we tell stories about our first DM from, you know, when we were first learning to play in our second edition days, who would do stuff like that, you know, where if you joke about the thing, you could lose all your powers.
Right.
Or sometimes, like, gods would just come down and smite people. And very capricious stuff, you know, because the DM had an image in his mind. This is the way your character should act.
This is not collaborative storytelling. This is my story.
Right.
And you now are lucky to be here.
Deviating.
Right. That's pretty awesome. Yeah, I don't know why it took me so long, because I remember you had written some original posts and some original tweets about outs, particularly when there was lots of people talking about combat. And I think I heard you on podcasts and things like that saying where everybody else seemed to be having trouble with the length of battle in 4E, and you said, well, I've got a technique that's been working really well. And for some reason it took me like, you know, a couple of months, you know, maybe longer, to really kind of understand how they worked. And I just, I was hoping to read articles about, like, I need 10 examples.
Right.
Because I just can't figure them out. And then something, I don't know what it was that clicked, but something clicked. And now I see them. Now in every battle I write an out in.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's one of those techniques that sounds very easy and obvious, but, you know, like, I didn't have it down. It was a lot of trial and error in my own game. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're, I mean, even with outs, you still have combats that go on too long. It's not the end all be all, but
yeah, right.
It's the technique that I've liked the most, you know.
Mm-hmm. It certainly keeps them reasonably, you know, I mean, it gives you a lot of control. It kind of puts more control back in the DM to control pacing,
right,
which is something that can be lacking, considering that the pacing of a story doesn't necessarily match how things play out in combat.
Right.
So for that reason, it works really well. The other thing I really love about it, and again, once I had kind of gotten my head around it and understood how they worked, was how unique it can make every battle.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, battles, I mean, I've run, God, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of battles now. And when you have an out in them, it kind of encapsulates the whole rest of the encounter so that each encounter is really something unique, instead of feeling like any other battle that you necessarily had.
I agree.
And I hope you agree it's your idea.
Right. But I'm just saying that it's not just, okay, here's a technique to end combat.
Right.
It really is something that's, here's something that can enhance your story.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things that I point to when people say, well, you know, there's not enough role-playing in it. Because, in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, people who have the role-playing combat dichotomy in their head,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's the sort of thing that I like to trot out. That's like, no, you know, right. they don't need to be right. opposite things.
Sure.
You know, here's something that blends them together and, you know, everything's richer for it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. And it's one of those, like, I have a list that I walk through when I'm building an encounter that says, like, okay, what are the monsters? What does the environment look like? What are some of the environmental effects? What hazards and traps exist? You know, so, you know, where are the terrain powers? You know, where are all the different things? And now I have the, okay, what's the out? And in some ways, it's one of those items. But in another way, it's the whole scope of the rest of it.
Right.
It's kind of the framework for the battle. If it's, you know, it doesn't always have to be. But you know, sometimes when you could have a whole big one, like the saving the villagers from the vampires, that's the scope.
Right.
The rest of the design is around, okay, well, how are you going to design an encounter that makes sense when you have a bunch of villagers that you need to save from vampires?
Yeah. By the way, you should write up that whole checklist in your blog, because I'd be interested in seeing that too.
I wrote it in a book, actually.
but you didn't phrase it like that. Is it a checklist?
Yeah, it was a checklist. And Sly Flourish's DM tips.
Right. I read it.
So, yeah, you know, it's interesting. But sometimes, though, and I notice I'm kind of getting caught in this trap, that I do them so often that it's like every battle now feels like it hasn't. And sometimes I think my group just wants to go and beat the crap out of a bunch of orcs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're like, oh, God, I don't want to deal with, like, statues that I have to line up. You know, or
right.
Oh God, you know, more beams, you know, or anything else. I'm like, can't we just go in and beat up a bunch of orcs? Do we really have to have, you know, every battle has to be like this game of Stratego? So
yeah, but then again, you can still throw those kind of battles at them, you know, that don't have those kinds of outs, but give them the type of battle that they want, mm-hmm. where it's not, you know, okay, this battle's going to take 2 hours because, you know, they're slightly higher level orcs and they're going to be a challenge and they're all going to be bags of hit points. Yeah. Just give them, like, you know, three chieftains and an artillery guy and a whole pile of minions, you know, and let them cut down orcs, you know, because, mm-hmm. you know, that'll be the satisfying fight and it won't last as long, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I had a battle that was going to be the big climactic battle in my Dark Sun campaign a few weeks ago. And the encounter was designed so that there was a guy that they needed to rescue who had been grabbed by these evil cannibal guys that lived under the city, under this, you know, in the sewers of Tyr.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole design of the battle was, okay, the guy's going to see the party come in and stab the dude who they kidnapped. And he's going to be bleeding to death. And the group has 4 rounds to get over to him. You know, and he's in a cage, so they can't exactly get to him to, you know, do heal checks and stuff like that.
Right.
So they have 4 rounds to kill the main guy, get the key, open the cage, and stabilize him before he dies. And it's not an all or nothing. If the guy dies, the guy dies, and the story will move on with him dead.
Mm-hmm.
And if it succeeds, then they rescue the guy and... you know, he gives them information that's really valuable. And what ended up happening was, like, I kind of forgot to mention anything about that in the first round.
Mm.
And then in the first round, they just managed to, like, control the entire battlefield. They you know, there's some mage black hole power where you can drop something in the center of a room and it sucks everybody up into it. And then in a pile,
yeah.
And then everyone else can nuke them with, you know, area effects. And but what I noticed is that the group was loving that. Like they just really enjoyed, you know, that they walked into this room full of guys and had, like, I don't know, 5 normal guys, an elite boss, and 20 minions or something. And they just loved being able to just destroy the minions and beat the hell out of the other guys. And, you know, and I never even put the out in. Like, I never, you know, that whole framework for the battle of the guy's going to be stabbed and you have to save him went away.
Right.
And they didn't notice, like, you know, I mean, they never heard anything about it. And I kind of read my notes and went, oh, yeah, I totally forgot about that. And in the meantime, they got this battle where they just walked in and got to beat up a whole bunch of dudes. So they
But if happy. Everyone liked it.
And exactly. Know? Everybody had a great time and the battle didn't take too long. It was a lot easier than I expected it when I wrote it. mainly because of that control element, and they were just, you know, they were doing four times more damage every time those dudes were piled on top of one another. So it worked out really well, but it was kind of, it was interesting how this battle that was really well structured and had this kind of, you know, cinematic theme to it just kind of turned into the big skirmish. And I don't, you know, it worked out fine, but it was just interesting to see how it went from, it kind of reverted from what I would consider to be like, you know, a level 5 advanced encounter into the kind of encounter I could have written 15 years ago.
Right.
So it was pretty neat. So, yeah, I always like to kind of end with real table usable tip sort of things. So if you have, you know, like either a relatively new DM or a DM that's played a few sessions and understands the basics of the game, but is starting to kind of see the length of time, you know, creep into the battles, what would be, you know, a few tips, three tips or five tips or whatever that you would point people towards to learn how to do these things?
The big one is still just get into the head of your bad guys that you're running. You know, think of, you know, it sounds a little cheesy, you know, a little touchy feely, but, you know, really like try to understand their motivations, you know, even if they're mindless orc or mindless undead or, you know, rampaging orc or whatever, you know, just like they're trying to do something. There is some reason they're attacking the party, you know, have them act appropriately and then be thinking of ways that, you know, the battle's going to end as a result, you know, like this is what they're trying to accomplish. You know, would it make sense to end the battle if they accomplish this, or, you know, push it to the forefront of this is what you should be doing. And, you know, like you do, think about it in context of the whole encounter, not just, you know, I have this battle, I'm going to grab something on, but you can also think, oh, this might be an interesting way to add, you know, an environmental effect that I've always wanted to use, or, you know, like a mini skill challenge that sounds interesting, or some kind of puzzle thing if your group's into that.
Right.
You know, whatever.
You made me order a copy of Jenga, by the way. It should be here in a couple of days.
Awesome.
Yeah. I don't know.
You're going to stage the fight on top of it?
I don't know if I'm going to stage a fight, or it's going to be some complicated puzzle that somebody has to figure out while everyone else is getting their ass kicked.
Right. You can also like write things on the bottom of the blocks and do an extra level there.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. You need a new set then, but you know. yeah. So those are the two big ones. Also I think it's, to kind of work backwards. If there's like an overpowered monster or something just completely crazy that you want to use in a battle, think of it that way too. Like, okay, you know, I really want to use, you know, the party's level 1, but I want to use Demogorgon. this is a way that you can do it. You know, you have this battle that has these alternative ways to end, and in fact is the only way, you know, that or you die. You know, here's another way. Like, you work backwards from there. That's what I did with my DM challenge adventure, my also losing adventure. Was the final one, you know, they're level 8 and I flop down the gargantuan red dragon, you know, with full stats. You know, they tried to attack it, and you know, that didn't work and it dealt tons of damage, you know, and so they had to figure out, you know, what else to do.
Well, if it's a Monster Manual 1 dragon, it's not that hard.
Yeah, Monster Vault.
Oh god.
Red Dragon, yeah.
Yeah, those guys are brutal.
Yep.
Yeah, those are good. I mean, you brought up the kind of think from the perspective of your monster, and I forget what I was, you know, the other night I was playing at my game, and I said, okay, well, you guys are going to be in this dungeon for the next 4 sessions, and the real question is, you know, what is your nemesis doing while you guys are in here? And they're like, I don't know. I said, yeah, I put myself to sleep thinking about what that guy's doing. And they're like, man, you need a hobby. I'm like, this is it.
right. But
I've always found that to really make for good stories. And it's neat that how that can tie in even mechanically into something like The Out by saying like, okay, what do these guys really want? They're not just here to, you know, beat on the party, and they haven't been, it's not a, you know, Doom 3 monster closet. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an actual purpose, and is that purpose, you know, sacrificing people, and you have to prevent them from sacrificing them, or whatever. So,
yeah, that's a great example, because, you know, it doesn't feel very heroic to me to say, like, okay, we went through a dungeon and we cut down hordes of sentient creatures and, mm-hmm. and grabbed the treasure and left. But if you say, well, you're actually saving people from being sacrificed, you know, you're freeing prisoners, you're doing all this stuff as you go,
right?
You know, possibly in the middle of combat, you're trying to prevent the dark ritual that's going to poke a hole in the planes.
Yeah.
You know, it feels very heroic to stop those things, but it's also, you know, it's more than just fighting at that point.
Right. One last question that I forgot about. Do you put multiple outs in a fight? Will you have like two or three different potential ways, besides like they could either kill them all or they'll do, you know, they'll trigger the out mechanic. Have you ever designed battles where there's like three or four completely different ways for the battle to potentially end?
Yeah, it's rare. What I tend to do more.
Complicated at that point.
Yeah, you know, like I'm kind of a lazy and forgetful DM myself, so if I put too much in there, I forget about it.
Right.
But it's not uncommon to have multiple paths to the same out,
uh-huh.
where it's not just you could, you know, use Arcana to disable these with magic. You'd also cut these down, or have multiple things that multiple characters could do instead of just, okay, wizard's turn again to run off into the corner and bumble stuff, you know, like whichever character there are options for different characters to do different things and feel like they're contributing if the player is interested in that.
Yeah. I like to mix in puzzles with skill challenges as potential multiple outs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're trying to unlock a door again. And the way to unlock the door is either you give them a maze and they have to actually do the maze in 30 seconds, you know, on a piece of paper with a pencil. Or they can say, yeah, I'm not good at mazes, so I'm just going to do thievery checks. And you go, okay, that's fine too.
Right.
You know, or never mind, we're just going to kill these guys.
Right.
You're like, okay, that's good too. So those can all work.
Yep.
I think the one tip as far as like a template for how to build an out and that has been successful for me is often like using the bloodied mechanic as kind of a trigger a lot of times for an out or for revealing an out that, you know, if you're fighting some big guy, you don't actually notice the out until either he or more than one of the other guys is bloodied. And that's when whatever their protection was or whatever their connection was, that's when it becomes revealed. And that way, you know that the battle is going to still be a challenge up to a certain point, but there's a key point where the information is going to start getting out.
Yeah, it's another good way to pace things.
Yeah, right. I found that to be the bloodied mechanic is kind of a really good mechanic for pacing outs, I think, you know, and determining like, okay, well, they'll still fight you until they're bloodied, but once they're bloodied and their boss is dead, that's when they'll leave. And that way they're not all just going to immediately run away.
Right.
So, yeah, that all works. Well, this is great. Like I said, I think the out is one of my favorite new, you know, and it's not even, I mean, I've been using it for a while now, but it's still some of the most fun that I have when I design an encounter. They've certainly made my encounters much, much nicer for people, not just in being able to get them done in a certain amount of time, but also in their interest. You know, they're always kind of interested in whatever the next battle is going to be because they know the battle is going to change and it helps with the story and it really helps with everything else. So, and I don't think I really had my head around all that idea as a single concept until you started talking about it. So I appreciate you spending some time and talking about it.
No problem. I'm glad you're getting use out of it.
Oh yeah. It's very cool. So good to talk to you.
Yep. You too.
And I will talk to you again.
Yep. See you.